This is AENN, American Exceptionalism News Network.
Protestations of Obama himself in his speech to children in Northern Ireland about peace. When he said, those who choose a path of peace, I promise you that the United States of America will support you every step of the way. We will be the wind at your back. Now I ask you, is this person going for the Hypocrite of the Century Award? Because we have to call things by their right names. And the reality is that by any serious examination, this man is a war criminal.
2-1-1-0.
I know some people want me to bypass Congress and change the laws on my own.
It is the agenda for the 21st century you're living in today. For a brave new world where everything that you cherished and held true will no longer exist.
The original Constitution, I think it is an imperfect document, and I think it is a document that reflects some deep flaws.
And that would authorize him to use the military to arrest people in the United States who, in the president's opinion, are enemies of the country.
You'll find that they've also asked for the right to imprison farmers who wouldn't keep books as prescribed by the federal government. The Secretary of Agriculture asked for the right to seize farms through condemnation and resell them to other individuals. And contained in that same program was a provision that would have allowed the federal government to remove 2 million farmers from the soil.
New government Republicans and Democrats were busy shredding the last vestiges of the Constitution. They're talking about inserting the army into domestic law enforcement. The homeland is part of the battlefield, and people can be held without trial, whether an American citizen or not.
I have been often to, the mothership in New York City, but it's good to have an outpost of the council right here down the street from the State Department. We get a lot of advice from the council, so this will mean I won't have as far to go to be told what we should be doing and how we should think about the future.
Take off the tinfoil hat and put on the Kevlar. It's time for battle with Paul Preston and the Agenda 21 Show.
Well, hello and welcome to Agenda 21 Radio. This is the radio show that is stopping totalitarianism, one exceptional American at a time. And yes, ladies and gentlemen, are you that exceptional American? I suspect you are. That's why you're listening to this radio show. So stand by and welcome aboard. We got a lot of things to talk about here on Agenda 21 Radio. Remember to visit our website, a21r.com. That's a21r.com. And, of course, newcaliforniastate.com, newcaliforniastate.com. State of the future, and boy, are we going to become the next state. It's happening all the way around California right now. New California is developing. Anyway, we got a lot of things going on here in Agenda 21 Radio, and so stay tuned. Anyway, we are going to be discussing a very interesting situation that's developed here in California and also throughout the United States and the world, believe it or not. There was an article that appeared in Dave Hodges' The Common Sense Show about the California Military Reserve, and this is a subject that came up a couple years ago, actually, and I was sitting here thinking, as this article was being written and produced by Dave Hodges, he had contacted me, and I said, yeah, I know all about it, or I've heard about it, anyway, and so we talked a little bit, and of course, he sort of added my name in the article, and so I said, well, let's do a little bit deeper dive, and let's find out some more information about the California Military Reserve. We're not talking about the National Guard. We're talking about the so-called California Military Reserve, which a lot of people are shocked to find out there is something known as the California Military Reserve. And, well, you know, most other people are, too, because it's sort of a hidden reserve, militarily speaking, in California. Well, I thought Californians, or I thought states weren't supposed to have the military. It was always the U.S. military, the National Guard, and so on. And there were those divisions were there. But, of course, that's not the case. There's some secret military, so to speak. But here to help clear all this up for us is someone I said, well, let's call in a reference on this, someone who might know about this, someone who's been associated with the New California State Movement for quite some time, several years now. Several years. I mean, we're getting into these several years things, 2-3 years, deep involvement. So Don Wilson, who is the author of St. Andrew's Revolution, who has been really the backbone of providing the historical context as to why we can actually form a new state, you know, statehood and all this other good stuff. And, you know, we talk about things like, you know, the whole beginning, the founding fathers and the rationale behind the Declaration of Independence, one of the most important documents ever written, by the way. People need to understand that. And he's given us very, very good information about that, and it's sort of the backbone for our rationale here on New California. So, Don, tell us a little bit about what this so-called military reserve is all about that California has.
Okay.
Welcome aboard,
buddy. Thank you. Thank you for having me. So just as a little bit of background, I actually ran the Veterans Affairs Committee in the State Senate for 8 years before I retired from the state. And
this is
what
California
that
state
means,
Senate.
Yeah, the California State Senate. And what that means is, there are two departments that were in my jurisdiction of oversight when I was in the state Senate. One of them was the California Department of Veterans Affairs. The other one is the California Military Department, which most people don't realize is a state department and not the National Guard. It is actually separate from the National Guard, which most people think the National Guard is the militia. So when we get into that, we got to go back into history a little bit to understand how we got here, because the militia that we set up in the 1800s, a lot of that language is still in our code, but we're not operating by that because of what happened in the Spanish-American War and World War II. So when California was founded, we had a militia just like the colonial militia, where if there was an emergency, that militia would be activated, the officers would be elected because you would elect the most able-bodied person to take command. And it was a traditional militia system. And so then what happened is, when the Spanish-American War comes along, there was a senator from Ohio, his name was Senator Dix, who did not like the response to the lack of manpower we had. So really, starting about 1902, 1903, our militia system slowly started to be converted over into a National Guard system. And I know that can be confusing for people because, you know, you go to the movies and you'll see these nice commercials, National Guard since 16, whatever. That National Guard is not the National Guard that we have today. They're two separate entities. They're two different bodies. And so what you have in California is a mixture of the two. And what happens by the time you get to the end of World War II is, now we've got to fight communism. The Cold War is on. So in the old days, what you had was, you had active militia and you had what was called unorganized militia. And the opposers of the Second Amendment.
What years was that for those two entities?
Well, that goes all the way back to colonial days. But in California, that would go back to the very beginning when we formed our first militia. And then in 1866 was the first time we ever referred to it in code as the National Guard. But the National Guard at that time was this active and in what we would say today is active and inactive component. But that inactive component of the militia was the unorganized militia, and it's everybody who can serve. It's that old everybody who's 18 and able-bodied. So, in fact, the California Code says the unorganized militia consists of all persons liable to service in the militia, but not members of the National Guard or Naval Militia. That's actually right out of the code. So that basically means when we need all hands on deck, the state of California can call everybody forward. Most people do not realize that California has its own draft, and everyone can be called who's able-bodied. So when they say it consists of all persons liable to service, obviously if you're in a wheelchair, you can never get drafted in the federal military and things like that. But for anybody else who's able-bodied and over the age of 18, you can be drafted by the state of California the same way you can be drafted by the federal government. And I remember when I first told that to Senator Dunn, he was out of Orange County. He looked at me and said, "You're serious?" Yeah, I was. So
you can actually draft
even the legislators don't know that.
Yeah, that's very interesting. So you can actually draft people. The governor can call for a draft of able-bodied people 18 and over.
Yes, and now that's still in the state code left over from the old militia code. The federal government might take issues with that, but in the California code, I mean, imagine everybody listening to this radio station could be activated by Governor Newsom tomorrow, according to the state code. So what happens is you have the active and inactive components, or the active and the unorganized component. And in the active component, in the state code, what you have is you have the National Guard, the Naval Militia, which really doesn't exist anymore. In 2005, we did a poll or research and found out there is one member of the Naval Militia. So it really exists only in the code anymore. And then the other part of the active component is what we call the state military reserve. And most people have no idea what that is or why it functions. And the reason why it functions the way that it does is when we got to the end of World War II, specifically 1947, the federal government changed what the militia meant. And they changed at the federal level the code to say that there's going to be the National Guard and the unorganized militia. And the attempt to do that, the reason why they had that, is now that we were fighting the Cold War and we are consolidating more power towards Washington, Washington wanted to be able to gain manpower from all the states. And so that's why you had this definition going on. So the real life example is that when World War I started, the French were all happy when they found out that the big United States was getting involved in this war, because they thought it was going to be access to a bunch of manpower. And then they were really bummed out, because what happened is, even though we were a big country, we weren't a militarized country. And they found out that our army only had, say, 118,000 guys ready for deployment over to France. So they thought they were getting this big ally, and they're only getting 118,000 guys when it all started. So there had always been this disenchantment by those at the top that they could never gain access to manpower, whether it was the Spanish-American War and Senator Dix, or if you look at World War One, or even if you look at the fact that we couldn't properly respond to Pancho Villa's invasion of the United States in 1913. As you look at those things, there was always a desire by those at the top to be able to gain access to more manpower. And so in 1947, the United States creates, or not the United States, the state of California creates the California Military Department. And this will give you an idea of how little our guys at the state level knew what was going on, because I actually went back and researched that bill in my official capacity. And at the time, the way you know that they really didn't know what they were creating is the only thing in the state archives on that bill is a letter from Governor Warren to the California Department of Fish and Game and the California Highway Patrol, asking them, if we created this military department, would it create a problem in the fact that these guys could wear uniforms? And so what he did is he wrote the California Highway Patrol and the California Department of Fish and Game, because those were the other two departments that had uniforms. And he's like, is this going to create a problem if we have a third department with uniforms? So here we are reworking the entire structure of a militia to a National Guard manpower pool grab. And even the governor himself knows so little about what's going on that all they do is ask the highway patrol, if we have uniforms over here, will that create a problem for you guys since you wear uniforms too? It's just an amazing lack of record on the change that happens in 1947. So
that's
then what happens? Yeah.
That's more
scary
than interesting.
Yeah,
it's unnerving.
Interesting and scary. It tells you that they didn't know what was going on. Or if they did know what was going on, they really hid the real agenda, because why is that the only thing in the archives? So fast forward 2 years in 1949, because what California realizes is a problem is, now if you're only going to have National Guard and unorganized militia at the federal level, wait, what if we have a state emergency we have nothing to take care of it because everything's under the National Guard, according to the feds now. So in 1949, we create an organization called the State Military Reserve. And the so it's sometimes known as SMR, State Military Reserve. It's also sometimes known as CSMR, California State Military Reserve. But the important thing is, in 1949, it's created because California has realized that under the new federal organization, that we have no ability to respond to emergencies on our own. The state of California has no way to take care of anything of itself unless the federal government activates these guys to Title 10 or Title 32 status. And so the reason why the California Military Reserve was created is so that California could always have some sort of response team, a cadre force, if you would. So say the feds come in and they do a draft and they take a bunch of our manpower, and then there's a severe state emergency. You can still have a cadre force to keep California organized under what we call the State Military Reserve. And that's the reason why it was created. And so now
when you say Title 10 activation, that means activation from National Guard into U.S. military, correct?
Yes. Yeah, so just to give a quick background, if let's say I'm in the National Guard, but I'm not activated, and the feds need to send me to Afghanistan, they'll activate me under United States Code Title 10. That's what brings me up to National Guard status to be sent overseas. Now, let's say it's something that, like, it's going to be state border patrol because we've got an influx of people. They can then authorize National Guardsmen to state use, and that would be done under United States Code Title 32. So when you talk about Title 10 versus Title 32, you're talking about federal work versus state work, but both of it's done under the auspices of the National Guard and the federal government, which is why it's in the United States Code. So that's what the problem was for California. So in 1949, what we do is we give the governor the ability to create our own cadre force of people that the feds cannot touch. The feds have no jurisdiction over them. And that way, and in fact, I whipped open my old code book, such forces, this is a quote from the code, such forces shall be additional to and distinct from the National Guard and shall be known as the State Military Reserve. Such forces shall be uniformed under such conditions and subject to such regulations as the governor may prescribe. And the reason why I stress and emphasize that is that there it is in the code that you've got this separate California supposedly cadre force in the time of emergency. The governor could activate everybody, but really the idea of it was to have some sort of skeleton crew, if you would, that would always be around, that in a state emergency in which maybe the feds are already dealing with their own emergency, that we would be able to still function apart from the feds if we needed to for our own state emergency.
Let me ask you this. Let me ask you this. If is this a situation where this is I would say an Article 6 violation of the Constitution?
It's early morning, so give me where you're going on that.
Well, you know, is it a violation of the federal Constitution to form a standing army by a state, aside from what they have in terms of the National Guard deployment under Article 10? Is that what I'm hearing here?
Well, I mean, all the states, so if you go a certain direction, yes. I think ipso facto, no, because what you have is all the states used to have their own militias, and they have a right to organize those militias as they see fit. If that part of the militia, however, got into making its own foreign policy, or that militia acting on its own, then you definitely have a violation of the Constitution, because foreign policy is strictly the purview of the United States Senate. There's no state that's supposed to engage in foreign policy. So in certain instances, yes, and I can tell you in certain instances, if that line's not been crossed, it's gotten awfully close. So I do believe there are some problems, but with what we've discovered thus far, we're fine. We're just talking normative ethics of the way that's supposed to be done according to the state military code. So where we are now, no, that's not a problem, but depending on how far we go in our conversation, we'll get there.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, okay, so our conversation hasn't gotten to a lot of the details yet, but it's about to. But I guess, but the bigger right. question looking forward, the authorities that vest right now with the governor of California, Gavin Newsom, he could assemble an army, basically, a full army, and bring people in to protect the home front, so to speak.
Yes. Absolutely. And that's in the code. It's not debatable, which a lot of people, I think they hear that and they start thinking, that seems a little far-fetched. And believe me, I'm the guy who had to tell all the senators that there was a provision for a California draft. And not all of them were happy with that. And at first, I'm like, here it is in the code. This is, it's not me making it up. Go to this code section. And like I say, I remember Senator Dunn in particular was rather surprised and disturbed by that, because I had been saying for years that we needed to do a code rewrite. And when he saw that, he totally agreed. He said, yeah, we need to do a code rewrite. So anyway, here's the important part and where we can lead to. So all of this is just, hey, we should be able to respond to emergency. How is this? Here's where the problem comes in. And the first guy who started pulling on the thread, I believe his name was John Hill. He was a reporter for the SACB. And the story appeared in 2005. And it's only gotten worse from there. So what broke last week to me is like, yeah, it's just one more, you know, brick in the wall, so to say. We've been following this for at least 14 years. If the article was written in 2005, there had to be something going on before that for right. them to have something to write an article.
Therein lies the problem with Senator Dunn. He probably recognized it too.
Right. Well, yeah. So, you know, we'd have to go back and talk to these guys, but because a lot of people have not connected the dots. The story last week, they don't connect with the stories of 2012, 2011, 2010, 2009, 2005, etc. All of them are part of the same string in the same jacket. And when you start pulling on it, that's when that jacket's going to become unwoven. But
it also starts to point to current 2019 and 2020 events.
Right, exactly. So what you have with the state military reserve is that's always going to be around, but anybody can be activated in state emergency. So my question would be, what sort of military state emergency exists today in California and has existed for the last 25, 30 years? I think anyone would be hard-pressed to say this is the California emergency as to why we've got this cadre force activated 24/7. There's a game that's played within this, and this is what's really hard for people to understand, is there's the California Military Department, which is not the National Guard. And these guys like to play this game where they say, oh, well, the military department is National Guard. Remember, I read what the militia was, and the National Guard is only one component of the active side of our militia. So the California Military Department is a state department meant to oversee everything. And it's important for people to remember that it's a state department, because a lot of people think that it's part of the National Guard, and it's not. And they're just state employees like anybody else. But what has happened is that these guys have now – it's what we called the SAD game. It stood for SAD. Under the California Military Reserve, they've created a thing called state active duty under the auspices of the SMR. And they will, for any reason, create positions for their friends. That's what the Bird Sanctuary article was on. They will create these positions and put their friends in these quote-unquote military positions, and they're basically feathering their own nest. And so,
do they have to be in the military, or have do they have to be retired?
No,
no, no military.
No,
they can play
Army.
Don't,
they don't have to be. Right. So, so what has to happen is under the state active duty, there are. So we know about the Title 10 and the Title 32, but that's federal. What happens at the state level is that you just have to declare under this military emergency that this position is military, is a military necessity, and you can bring your friends in. So let's say you and I served in the in what they say is the big army. You and I served in big army together.
Big army.
Right. So let's say I get a job in the state California Military Department, and say you're 55 and you've already got your pension, I can do you a solid and I can say, hey, buddy, retire out of the feds. I'll bring you over. I'll declare this a civilian position to be a military position, and I'll bring you over to colonel's pay. We'll declare that you're a colonel in the state military reserve. And so it does several things. A, it gives you a second retirement courtesy of the state of California. It's a way around the civil service exam, because now that I've declared it a militarily sensitive position, you don't have to take the civil service exam. And so what you've got is you've got guys who may or may not have been military, because, well, I might be able to do that for you because we were buddies. What I might be able to do also, and what has happened, is let's say you're just my best friend from high school. Or your kid needs a job. I can do the same thing for a civilian. So I actually, as I was doing research this morning, I found an old memo that I wrote for the senators called The Sad Game. It was a briefing I did for all the committee members. And I actually went through and showed them the way the whole game was played. So my question to you is, do you want me to take time to go over that memo, or will that take too long?
Oh, no, please. No, we've got all the time in the world.
Okay. So this is what I wrote for my committee members in the state Senate. And I went over the 2005 article on the bird sanctuary. And so in 2009, the state auditor actually got involved in this. And so in 2006, the state auditor had said, there are way too many of these positions being created. They're not accountable. We don't know how or why we're paying for them. You know, what's going on? And so in 2009, the state auditor came back and said, in what they call an unmet audit findings report. And they were reviewing work on what they said were 210 of these SMR positions. Now, the military department said only six of them were converted. And you get that whole argument between the state auditor and the military department. And I bring that up only because these are things people can go look up. They don't have to take my word for it. You can go find the Bureau of State Audit's report in the unmade. But this is the way they play the game. There's a combination of military and veterans code sections. 120 is the one that I defined or told you what defines what the militia is, both unorganized and active. And then you've got 142, 146, 213, and 550. And 550 was the bill, Section 550 was the bill in 1949 that created the state military reserve. So under Section 142, it says that the governor may order the active militia or any portion thereof to perform, quote unquote, military duty of every description, including necessary administrative duties. And then in Section 146, the governor may call into active service any portion of the active militia as may be necessary. So by the time you take those two things that the governor can do with the organization of the militia, with the existence of the state military reserve, there is a game, the state active duty game, or what I termed the SAD game for our senators. And so first you declare a position to be military, even if there's no military nexus, other than the circular argument that it's military because it's a military department, right?
Well, the key so thing then, the key thing in that finding is that the governor may order to duty by the executive decree, basically, them to do any kind of military activity.
Exactly. But remember, all this is a predicated that there's an existing state emergency for these guys to exist.
Well, let me ask you this. How easy is it in this day and age to create an emergency, to create a crisis?
Oh, it's very easy, but these guys have been in existence for at least 30 years. And so the question goes, have we had an ongoing emergency for the past 30 years? No, it's just nobody understands this or what's going on.
Right.
So the significance of that is now that you've declared it a military position, it's exempt from the state civil service exam, right? And so now that it's declared part of this military emergency, part of the code basically says in the old days, when we would activate somebody to serve California in the way an officer serves the federal government, that we'll just give him the same pay scale, right? And so once the position is declared military, you substitute the military pay scale for the civilian pay scale. So this is how they puff up their pay. And so for those who do have prior military service, you don't start them at the bottom of the military pay scale. You bring in all of their years that they've already served. So let's say I knew you in the military and you were a major, but I'm going to bring you into the state military reserve as a colonel. Now, not only do I bring you in as a colonel at the top of the pay scale, but one of the things, and this is what used to get us active duty guys upset. So everybody in the Capitol who was active duty, we all understood what was going on and it infuriated us. So like when I was in the Navy and I was in San Diego, San Diego is not a cheap place to live. So had I had my family at the time, rather than being, you know, young and not married yet, there probably wouldn't have been base housing for me and my wife and all our kids. And so they would have to place us in San Diego. And since it's part of duty, they'd give us a stipend that was comparable to the San Diego housing market. Well, these guys, even though they're state employees working at the California Military Department, they're pretending like they're on active duty and they're collecting this housing allowance from the state of California. Now, the thing about an allowance is that it's tax-free, because it's an indemnity. It's not part of your pay. So for instance, let's say a major retires from the military 1 month and he's my buddy. The next month, I can give him or her an SAD position in the government. I can call it Government Affairs and California Military Department. And now I'm paying him a major salary, which back at the time that I wrote this memo was just under, say, $7,200 a month or $86,000 a year. Right. But now I'm going to get a housing allowance for Sacramento of $2,424 a month. So I'm getting another $29,000 on top of my $86,000 tax free. And here's part of the game that they played, because I had to call CalPERS and say, hey, what kind of things are they doing? So they're getting it tax free from the California taxpayer, but they're reporting it to CalPERS as part of their regular pay. So that inflates their retirement formula when they retire.
Geez. So
they're screwing the taxpayers multiple ways. One, they haven't proved they're qualified to fill the position. Two, they're collecting an elevated pay and they're doing it tax free. And then three, they're getting it in their retirement formula on the back end.
Is this still going on?
I'm not head of the committee anymore, but I know as I was leaving as part of a quote-unquote reform bill, they were padding it. So the military has these regulations called up or out regulations. Basically, I couldn't stay, an 01 for 30 years because that shows I'm not motivated, I'm not contributing at all, I never get a promotion. And so there's certain up and out regulations. If you don't make 02 by such and such a time, you're gone. 03, you're gone. Things like that. And so we used to have in the code a limit at 60 years old, because it was assumed if you're over 60, we're not going to pull you in for a state emergency. Well, if you understand the way the state retirement formula works, your multiplier goes up past the age of 60. And so these guys, duping the legislature, convinced them that they need to get rid of that age of 60 cap. So now these guys, so I'm imagining this is going on only worse, because now they can get the extra big multipliers past the age of 60 since they got the age of 60 limitation removed. So it's probably worse than when I wrote this memo.
Right. And I was actually recruited to join the military reserve a number of years ago. And that was exactly the lure they were saying, is that, you know, you're over 60.
Right. Okay. Then you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Well, I'm just connecting dots, you know, bigger dots, you know, to, I knew there was something wrong with the system when I heard that. And now I'm connecting the dot as to how wrong it really was. I'm certainly glad I never even considered it, you know, but that's just me. Go on.
Okay. So what you have now is I go over that because I want people to understand this is a State Department, and this was one of those moments, because what these guys do is they put on their uniforms and they go in the Capitol and they start lobbying and they claim that, hey, we're military. And finally, when I was briefing one of the staffers for a member of the Rules Committee, as we had a confirmation hearing coming up, they're like, but these guys keep saying you don't know what you're talking about, that you're kind of off the reservation, and that you really don't understand the system, and that they're federal soldiers. And this is a key point, so keep it in your mind, because it'll come into the conversation later. That's when I looked at them and said, look, I was active duty. How many active duty people do you know that were on a CalPERS retirement? If these people are federal military, they're not in the CalPERS system. It's not that hard to understand that they're state employees when you understand that they have a CalPERS retirement. And I just got this blank look, like, crap. So I know that they knew about it because I'm the one who told them about it. But there are certain things like that. You know what? Even though I was born in California, I've lived my whole life in California. When I was in the military, California was not offering me a retirement because I was not a California state employee. It wasn't until later life that I became a state employee, and that's when I got on CalPERS. And so what happens is these guys play in what this fog is that the average civilian doesn't understand, the difference between state employment.
Right.
Orders under Title 10, orders under Title 32. So, like, if you're the auto mechanic and your unit gets activated, you go off to Afghanistan, when you come back, people would laugh at you if you then started wearing your military uniform while fixing cars. They'd be like, dude, you're not on orders anymore. Get in your auto mechanic uniform.
Right.
But that's what these guys do. If they get activated, which isn't guaranteed, but let's say they do go to Afghanistan for 18 months and come back, they leave their uniform on and they walk around the state of California like they're still in the military, and they're not. At that point, they're a state bureaucrat. But because of this SAD game that they play, where they've technically changed the position to a military position, they're not in the United States military anymore. They're under this state active duty status under the California Military Reserve behind a desk in the state of California, padding their California retirement, much of it tax-free on the front end.
And they're engaged
on the back end.
Now, let's talk about somebody who's never been in the military. You know, you're giving an example of somebody who has been in the military, was activated, and went off. But somebody who's never been in the military, see, like I was being recruited, I was never in the military. And I found it somewhat appealing because I always wanted to be in the military, but I never joined the military because of family situations back in the Vietnam War and everything, which is in a whole other story. Right. But that's not the point here. But let's say I went in, and how does that apply to me walking around in a military uniform? Military reserve.
Well, in your case, you'd probably just be a bureaucrat who was somebody's friend who they created a position. So you can just join the state military reserve without actually being put on state active duty. So I have a friend who's a rabbi. And they didn't have any rabbis. So they recruited him that in case the units ever got activated and there were ever any Jewish soldiers serving, that in that emergency, he could be activated. Now, he's never been activated to anything, even if he was activated to state active duty. He's never going to be activated by the feds, the National Guard, because he's not a National Guardsman.
Gotcha. Remember, well, that's my point.
The feds have no access to this. Yeah, right.
Right. This person like me, I would not have been able to go to active duty in Afghanistan, even if I wanted to, because I had my joined after I was 60. I had joined the state military reserve, and therefore I was basically confined. I would never be placed on active duty. Isn't that correct?
Right. The feds have no access to the state military reserve, and you know, and I'll only quote code, not because I want to sound like I'm smart, but so other people can go look this up if they want. But the Military and Veterans Code, Section 51, it says that the military department includes the Office of the Adjutant General, the California National Guard, the State Military Reserve, the California Cadet Corps, and the Naval Militia. And so the federal government has no ability to deploy the State Military Reserve or the Cadet Corps or any of the civil servants in the California Military Department. So that's one of the things that I would point out. If the National Guard and the California Military Department were the same entities, then the federal government would have jurisdiction over everything in the military department. They don't.
And they don't. And that's the key thing. The governor does. And the governor could have over jurisdiction over me. I've never been in the military, but he could actually call me or you, or other people to become part of the active duty of the California state military.
Yes, and on the flip side of that, the state can't stop the federal government from activating the California National Guard. So these are different entities, but the state has to have some oversight of its National Guard. So the National Guard's under the military department, but the military department is a distinct entity from the National Guard. And that's what most people don't understand. So If you go on to Section 52, it says the Adjutant General succeeds to and is invested with the duties, power, purposes, responsibilities, and jurisdiction of the Division of Military Affairs and of the officers and the employees of that division. And then it goes on, it continues, that the Adjutant General shall, in addition to all other duties, so now we put his military duties aside, shall be head of the military department and shall be responsible for its affairs, functions, duties, funds, and property. So in our code section, it shows when the adjutant general is head of our military affairs and when he is a state secretary, head of a military department. And this is where we had problems even getting the legislators to understand the difference. And the reason why they had to understand the difference is we had a series of scandals. And in those series of scandals, we had guys that were reporting to the feds that they were on federal duty and collecting a check. And they were reporting to the state that they were on state active duty and collecting a check. They're collecting two checks at the same time. And so what happened is the feds went to investigate and they played this game saying, nope, we were on state active duty at the time. That state, not federal, you guys have no rights to those records. So that's when we as a committee got involved, because the federal whistleblowers came to us and said, these guys aren't giving us the pay records. They're claiming it's your jurisdiction. So then when we went to get the records, guess what they did? Nope. We were on federal active duty. You guys have no right to that. And so they wouldn't give it to us. And so now you've got this entity who is in actuality claiming to have no oversight from the state or the feds. And this is very important, because it's given a growth to a mindset that these guys can get away with whatever they want to get away with, because if the feds come, they claim they're on state active duty. If the state comes, they claim that they're federal soldiers and they can't be touched. And so you have nobody running any true oversight of these guys, because they keep playing this game. And here's how it came up in the first place.
Wow.
So I hope you're sitting down.
We are.
I hope you're sitting down, because when I get to the end of this, I know you're going to get the significance of this, given the new California connection. So the reason why we got involved is in 2009, there was a governor who figured out what was going on, and he fired his entire staff. And that caused the National Guard Bureau to start looking at different states. And the National Guard Bureau looked at Ohio, Mississippi, and California and said, those three stink. Go investigate them. Now, I don't know what happened in Mississippi. I obviously was very close to California. And the reason why they stonewalled us is in 2010, the Ohio National Guard got brought up on RICO charges.
Oh, my God.
So the Ohio National Guard was charged under the RICO statutes. Well, what started, and so I think our guys would have been in some serious trouble, except what they did is that because our guys didn't fully understand the structure, they never released records to anybody. They didn't release it to the feds. They didn't release it to us. So I'm guessing the mistake the Ohio Guard made was they actually turned the records over and somebody was able to look at them. So, but here's the kicker for you and why you might be able to talk to this guy. What happened in 2009 that kicked all of this off is in the state of Texas, Governor Rick Perry found out what was going on. He fired everybody. So all of this was started because of what Rick Perry did in 2009.
You're kidding me.
No, I'm not kidding you.
Are you kidding me?
I'm not. So the reason why all of this started to come undone is because Rick Perry looked at the guys in Texas and said, "You're gone." And then the National Guard Bureau had to start looking at stuff. And so the Guard Bureau said, we might have problems in Ohio, Mississippi, and California also. And like I say, there were RICO violations filed against the Ohio Guard. And then I can give you firsthand what happened in California. And given what happened in Ohio, that's probably why these guys were so set on not turning anything over. But we didn't have the bulldogs on our side to go and say, no, you're under our jurisdiction. You're giving us the records. So that's how we end up where we are today, is that you've got this California Military Reserve, which was created for a legitimate reason in 1949, but they now play the state active duty game.
Well,
and
not only
they're
that,
able to bring in their friend.
The potential for the governor to call in, you know, immediately a draft of able-bodied people to fend off whatever is also very real. That's a reality.
Right. I mean, if you look at Pompeo's invasion of the United States, right? Yeah. But there was originally, especially considering if this was done in 1949, right, it was only 36 years before that Pancho Villa had invaded the United States.
Correct.
And so
Correct.
They would have understood the necessity to call up manpower. And that was a legitimate reason to write that law.
Mexico invading it's California in the United States, I might add. That's Pancho Villa business. All right.
Yeah, exactly. And so so these were created for legitimate reasons when they saw the way that the feds had altered things and trying to switch to a National Guard system. But now people have found the loopholes. So again, I would always go back to what's the state emergency that these guys are activated. You know, when we did our study and we were looking into things, they told us there are probably about 550 state active duty positions. But there's a newsletter called The Grizzly that's kind of a National Guardsman newsletter. At one point, The Grizzly had listed over 700 state active duty positions. So, and part of the reason for that confusion is part of the shell game they play is there's permanent state active duty and temporary state active duty. So if I've got you on the payroll as one of my friends, but I know I can't really justify it, I create a temporary position for you, and then maybe a couple of years later I create another temporary position, and I move you to it. So there's this constantly moving shell game that makes it hard for auditors and overseers to know what's being spent legitimately versus which jobs are for my friends. So how many of these are legitimate? How many of them aren't? A lot of these positions could probably be filled by state civil servants. But again, they don't turn their records over. They don't let the legislature truly oversee what they're doing. So how do we know? And that plays very importantly into what came out last week. because one of the things, and how you said, hey, is this a violation of the Constitution? This is a problem and a question we had years ago, because we have guys in the state of California, we have a thing called the Partnership for Peace. Now, how the state of California can engage in this, I don't know. But what it means is the state of California has an official relationship with the state of Ukraine, or I guess now the country of Ukraine. But, you know, and so under the auspices of this Partnership for Peace, the state of California has been in the Ukraine for years. And, you know, so when all this stuff about the Ukraine started coming up in Washington, that's exactly what I looked at. I'm like, well, it fits, right?
Yeah.
Because we've been in the Ukraine, the California Military Department, and that's important. If we understand the difference between the Military Department and the National Guard, the California Military Department has been in the Ukraine for years. I don't see, as an American, take away the fact that I've lived in California my whole life, as an American, what in the hell is going on?
Shocking.
You can say it's a partnership for peace. You can say it's for trade. You can say whatever else. But there's no way that state citizens from a state department should be going over and conducting whatever they're doing in a foreign country.
In uniform, right? I might add, from what I hear.
And with a straight face, will put their uniform on and claim they're in the military. And we're not talking about being deployed over there as a National Guardsman, right? We're talking about going over there as a member of the California Military Department. And here's the problem. I don't know if you – I think you might remember, because I might have brought it up before, but I don't know how many of your listeners remember when the Russians, they invaded Georgia.
Oh, yeah.
And there were some – okay, so there were some accusations at the time that the United States had soldiers over there. Well, our federal government, they denied that we had any soldiers over there, and the Russians were adamant that we did. Well, part of what came up in our investigations is I had these whistleblowers stepping forward. One of these guys said, we had soldiers over there. How embarrassing would it have been for the United States had one of those guys gotten killed and they produced the body, and here the United States government was saying, no, we didn't have anybody over there, and then they produced an American that they had shot in the invasion. And I said, well, what's up? And the guy said, the Kentucky National Guard had people over there, but it doesn't necessarily mean the feds knew about it.
Oh,
so there's
a major question. Yeah, that was a major question. Listen, we're running out of time in this hour, and I know we want to stick around for the next hour and explain this. Because, yeah, I remember distinctly all those accusations. And, of course, if a Kentucky National Guardsman was there, then obviously somehow the federal government did not know about it. That's what you're saying. The feds didn't know about it.
Well, at least the feds said that. So it would be interesting, because if, let's say that's true, then this guy, is he over there on Kentucky state active duty? How did these Kentucky Guardsmen get there? So the one of two options, the feds were lying or the feds were telling the truth and those guys got over there somehow. If it's the second scenario, how did they get there? And how's that not a violation of the United States Senate having jurisdiction over foreign relations?
How is
treaties,
that not treason,
like that?
I might add. Anyway, we're talking to Don Wilson, and we're going to be talking a little bit more when we come back, obviously. So hang on through the break. You're listening to Agenda 21 Radio. Remember to visit our website, a21r.com, for more information on this story and others. This is a major, major story, and we're going to be exposing even more in the next hour, so you might want to stay with us here on Agenda 21 Radio. Remember to visit our website, a21r.com, and, of course, newcaliforniastate.com, newcaliforniastate.com. So thanks for listening. We'll be back after the short break. And stay strong, America, because we are exceptional Americans.
We're sending out an SOS to the last vestiges of freedom, democracy, and the American way of life. Paul Preston with Agenda 21.
Stay tuned for more of Paul Preston's Agenda 21 Radio.
This is AENN, American Exceptionalism News Network.